My husband's going to speak after me, so I just want to make sure I don't suck up the whole time, because that's who I am. I'm really selfish, and I like all of you to pay attention to me. Just kidding. Not really. But it took me a long time to admit that I was powerless over alcohol and that I was an alcoholic. Who wants to admit that when you first come in here? Probably none of you. Or maybe. I don't know. I was not one of them. But I'm going to let God step in here at some point. I'm just going to sort of go through the, you know, my experience, and hopefully my strength and hope will definitely come through my higher power so that one of you can hear something. Or if not, I just get to remind myself why I'm here and what my purpose is. But yeah, I mean, I had I was around alcoholism my whole life. And I was introduced to AA when I was 16, but had really no idea or desire to join or be part of. 'Cause I wasn't as bad as all of you, and I didn't have the same stories as all of you, and my story, you know, was so unique, and I was just so different. Which really didn't end up being the case. My experience was more just for me to be able to pass that on and hopefully to have another woman identify with it. And then we could, you know, build the solution through God together. And that's sort of what I've found now. But my experience with drinking and where I really started to find out that I was powerless over alcohol came in when I was... It was back in 2010, and I had, like, thrown this huge surprise birthday party, and it was a cocktail party in Harpswell. I don't know if any of you know where Harpswell is, but it's, like, this really little place, and it's, like, a half an hour away from town, which is where, like, a Hannaford is. So it's not very classy. It's not, like, exciting. But no one did what I wanted them to do that night, so I drank at them. And I got so intoxicated at 20 that I wound up at a bar and left my 15-year-old brother at this party, I was his kin at this point. And I don't remember anything for the next few days because I was withdrawing from alcohol. And that still wasn't enough for me, and he was really scared being left home alone. With all these other people who he had no idea who they were. But I did slow down on drinking at this point, and I was just controlling it. I was kind of like the guy in the big book who, you know, had this engagement to be kept, and so he's not going to drink until, you know, the 25 years later and the carpet slippers come out, and then he's off and running and doesn't even remember anything. So that's kind of how my story goes, is... I start to try to control my drinking, but the last time, you know, my last drunk was me trying to control my drinking, and it couldn't happen anymore. Like, I couldn't not get drunk, and I couldn't not get drunk to the point of blacking out and not remembering things. And at this point, it was the last straw for the place that I was living, and I was told that I either needed to do the 12 steps or find another place to live. Well, finding another place to live looked really great, and doing the 12 steps did not. And so, who wants to hear that you need a spiritual solution? Probably none of us. Because what does that even mean? Like, what do you mean I need a spiritual solution? Like, I got this. I'm doing it. And so I'm still not really admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm really not getting it. I don't want to. But I'm doing it anyway. I'm going through the steps. And it's on my fourth step, and I'm writing resentments about my boyfriend who's controlling my drinking and telling me that I cannot have X amount of drinks because he doesn't like the way I behave. Red flag, you know? Like, so I'm starting to realize, like, oh! And how did I get into this relationship in the first place? Let's rewind. I was blacked out when we met. He had just gotten out of jail from an OUI. Knight in shining armor. Like, oh, hello! Like, hey, let's hang out. Like, you are exactly what I want. And so our relationship progressed this way, and I did not stay sober throughout this entire relationship. But he was mad at me for my drinking. Yeah, well. So, you know, I'm reading all this to my sponsor, and she's like, you are totally one of us. Like, what? Like, because we are self-diagnosed. We have to have a desire to stop drinking to come in here. So she's like, do you at this point have a desire to stop drinking? I was like, yeah, I do. And it's funny now, but, like, I was so gung-ho on controlling and, like, being in power. Like, being powerless for me was not something I was willing to admit. And so, you know, and I have a lot more experience that I could share. Like, you know, I got arrested at 15 for shoplifting. That could have been a red flag. You know, whatever. Just all sorts of things. But funny story is that my 5-year class reunion was last week. And so I think, like, now being in AA, like, oh, maybe I have a purpose to go here. I could make some amends or I could show up. And the last time I talked to some of these women now that were in my class was at another party I threw that girls were not doing, or, you know, men, whatever. People were not doing what I wanted them to do. And so lack of power has always been my dilemma. I just never realized it. So I threatened them all with a butcher knife and told them all to get out of my house. But what I really meant was stay and have fun. But what I was doing was not that. And then when they weren't doing what I wanted them to do, which I'm sure was probably confusing, I took the knife on myself. And so that scared, you know, a lot of my 15-year-old friends. And now they won't talk to me. And I, you know, I'm sitting there like, oh, yeah. And, like, with a clear frame of mind, like, I probably really harmed those people. And it's probably best that I don't try to make an amends to them and back off. But, like, so I definitely am powerless over alcohol. My life absolutely became unmanageable. And when I, you know, finally got in here, I was hopeless. I was finally beaten down. And it was a spiritual and emotional hopeless for me. I didn't have one of those, like, low bottoms. I didn't really lose, all my family members were kind of distant at that point anyway, and I didn't have a lot to lose. You know, I had a car that I had for a long time, and I was still driving that. So I didn't, it was more like internally, it got to the point where I was just broken, and I was really alone, and I felt like I couldn't talk to anybody. And because I had shut them all out again, because that was kind of my goal at one point. I was like, well, if I don't have to deal with you, I'll be okay. And so I kept you all out here, and I never knew my truth. And I could never talk to you about my truth because I was so delusional, because I continued to believe my own lies. And this is where my God came in. And it's, you know, my God conscience was, like, right all the way down in my belly. And it was this little voice, and it said, you need to call the one person that you don't want to call. And this one woman was in AA, and she had a spiritual solution, and she was sponsoring women. And she, every time I'd come to her with my problems and my woes, she'd say, wow, you know, like, she'd always have this silver lining. I don't even know what it was because I didn't even get it. But I called her, and, you know, I'm like, I am hopeless. I am powerless. I don't know what to do. I can't move on. Like, I was to the point where I couldn't even, like, get in my car to go home because I was, like, and I was leaving a meeting. This is my whole point. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. She's like, well, first of all, you've definitely got alcoholism. And second of all, you need a sponsor. So these are all things that I still am like, why do I keep getting directed to this program? And she was like, I have a number for you. Call this woman, meet up with her for coffee, and let me know how it goes. So I met up with her for coffee, and she didn't tell me any of what I wanted to hear. She definitely explained a spiritual malady to me and how I was very selfish, and that I continued to do things based on self, and it put me in harm's way. And then I had a choice whether or not I wanted to do that anymore. And I had never heard that before. I just thought that, and what I didn't realize was that was all insanity, is I thought that I was stuck in that cycle. And I thought that by me doing the same things over and over and over again, that eventually I'd get a different result, but it never was going to happen. And so she offered me a different way to live. And so I ended up switching sponsors shortly after I went through the steps with her. But that was my first, like, reaching out for help and asking to live it in a different way. And the first little light of hope that I found in this program, and the first woman that I was able to be vulnerable with and to really, like, breathe again. Like, I was okay. And so the second time that I went through a little more thoroughly. And this is what I you know, pass on, and this is what I love. And in our second step, we really talked about how it's a cornerstone, and that upon this cornerstone, we're going to build an arch to walk through. And I love metaphors, because I need visuals, and I need clear-cut directions, or else I'm going to mess it up. So I could get that. I could get that step one was like my solid foundation, and that my cornerstone would be God. And this idea of God, however big, however small, whatever. I mean, that could go on for a long time. But she directed me. Like, I could have spent a long time on step two and what a God is. But she was like, write down a few things now. I was like, oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I can do that. And my God ideal has changed, but what has remained the same for me is that I believe in it, and that I'm willing to believe in it, and that without that, my life run on self-will is going to get me those same results, and I'm unwilling to live that way again. So we proceeded on to step three, and also in step two, like I got a whole bunch of new ideas, a bunch of new ways to live life. Like, I wasn't going out on a vengeance anymore. I was starting to gain a purpose and much more relaxed and calm. Like, her husband laughs now, but he's like, when I first met you, you were off the wall erratic. Like, no one could be around you. You were just so loud. And he's like, now, you know, like, you take a breath and you're calm and... And that's great, because that person was not me. That was like a character that, you know, just that face that I need to put on to keep you out here. And today, I don't want to do that. Today, I try really hard to be vulnerable and to share a lot of the things that are going on with me. Even if that's saying, like, I'm embarrassed and I was wrong, which I have to do often with my husband, because he's also in this program. So, he tells me all the time, like, stop trying to be so cool, you're not. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm not, like, I don't know why I need to be, you know, why do I try to be cool? It's because I'm scared. And so in order for me to really let go of my will and my thoughts and to have God direct me, I have to, you know, continue to surrender. And that's all part of step one. I think all the steps are kind of intertwined, but I have to really, you know, think about who it is I want to be, because the reason I got in here was because I crossed all of my own moral lines. So I will never do this. I'm doing it. Then I'm doing it often. Well, I will never do this on a Friday. And then I'm doing it on a Friday. Like, I just never had any guidelines in my life or knew how to live. I was a mess. So that's why the God idea really works for me. Because it's baseline, clear cut, and I agree with them. And so in my fourth step, there were some things in there from my past and my childhood and things that, I mean, when I was really young, like five, that I didn't even realize I was doing, that I was really ashamed of. And before I even started writing my fourth step, my sponsor told me a lot of her this step stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay, I have all those same things. So I am absolutely all right to write about this and see what my truth is. But before that, I was really scared, and I didn't share some of those things with my first sponsor. And I didn't realize, and I was lucky to get back into it so quickly, because I do believe, had I not been able to share that, I would have been sick still. Because any secret I keep is just something for me to build off of. And again, like, pain is my motivator. I do not want to be in spiritual pain anymore. So I go through my, you know, my resentments, and I'm mad at a lot of people, and I have a lot against myself, a lot against the actions and the woman that I was. And the truth most of the time was, like, I just wasn't being who I wanted to be. I wasn't, you know, I was selfish. I was trying to get my way over and over and over and over again, and it just never happened. And then fears. I had a lot of fear, and every time, you know, we got down to the core of them, and it's like fear that I'll drink, and if I drink, I'm to die, and if I'm to die, I don't know, and that there is no God. So every time, my baseline fear was that there is no God, there's not a plan for me, and I'm screwed. Well, if I trust and rely upon God, is that real? No. And did I ever? No. So throughout this process, it's all about gaining that trust with the higher power and starting to live a different way. And again, it's something I believe in. It's something I try to practice often, daily, you know, in all situations. And I'm starting to see that I am able to do that now. And in my, as for my sex inventory, on my first sex inventory, I was very bare bones about it. I was like, oh yeah, you know, I had these boyfriends, whatever. Well, when my sponsor explained to me that it was how I conducted myself as a woman, I had a whole lot of people in the harm's done column. I caused a lot of harm to many different people, to men and women, to even, you know, to my father. And that, you know, that's some serious truth to start to see. But if I don't see that, I'm not going to be able to not live that way. So in looking through all that, like, and all I really had to do was copy and paste the 9 questions and just change the first name. Like, it was all the same. My conduct was over and over and over and over. But what I thought was really cool after that was I got to make a sex ideal of who I wanted to be and what I was looking for in a relationship. And I have a pet owner ideal now. I have a employer ideal. I have a sponsor ideal. I have all sorts of these ideals that I'm able to live my life by, and they're ever-changing, you know. But again, without some, like, consistency and structure in my life, like, I'm a mess. And I love, well, I don't love, but my character defects come up often for me. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, they are really sometimes blatantly obvious. And it's always when I'm in pain that I'm willing to look at them. But I was also told that the more I practice them, the less God can remove them. And so sometimes it takes me 47 times to practice the same character defect until I realize that I need to ask for it to be removed. But humility is one of my big character defects. I have a lot of pride. And for me to get humble, and for me to get humble with somebody else, and for me to get humble with God is just, you know, and that's what that fifth step is. It says, admit to yourself, to God, and to somebody else the exact nature of your wrongs. And sometimes I don't, those three parts, they're, I don't know, sometimes I feel like they're optional, but they're not. And so, and, yeah, step 7, yeah. So that humility for me has just been something God absolutely removed all of my defects that were detrimental to society, and I'm grateful for that. But there's a lot of other things that sort of made me up. You know, I had a lot of, like I said, like pride. Like, I am constantly thinking about how you're thinking of me. That comes up for me all the time. How is this person viewing you in this situation? And some of the big things for me that come out of that are, you know, selfish and dishonest and abandonment and loneliness and fear and, you know, all these things just, like, they'll come up now. And I didn't even realize that they were there. And a lot of them came up at my wedding. I had a lot of unresolved resentment against my dad. And I had no idea. And I had already made amends to my dad. And so even in recovery, I went right back to that little girl who was defensive, and I was protecting myself again. And I was unable to be vulnerable and have humility and just say, like, I'm scared. Like, I'm embarrassed. Or, you know, just those simple conversations, and I was trying to protect myself. And so I'm really grateful for all of these experiences to keep me growing, to keep me learning, to keep me getting rooted in my truth. And a lot of the time, my truth is my God. And becoming willing to make amends. I like I said, I made a lot of my amends pretty early on. And now, like, I'm at a point in my relationship with my dad where, you know, he's unwilling to hear an amends from me from my behaviors on my wedding day. But as for my relationships with my mom and my brother and even, you know, ex-boyfriends and their families, like, I never realized in, like I said, in the harms done category, like, who was affected by this? There was a lot of people in some of those relationships that I really had no idea, like parents or, you know, at a Christmas party, and I was really embarrassing. And so did it go out to make amends to all of them? No, but some of them I felt like I had really directly harmed. And I've been able to make amends to them and be part of their life, and that's a huge gift. And I think that making amends and your character defects, like, to be vulnerable and humble to admit your wrongs to these people, you're less likely to start practicing those same defects in your current relationships. And I think that that's really special that we're able to do that. Because that's where a lot of the magic happens, is families can be put back together, relationships can be built, new ones can be built. And all of that is God's work. And step 10 is just a cool little way to wrap up 4 through 9. And sometimes, if I'm really on it, I can just go right through it, and I don't owe anybody an apology, but do I do that all the time? No. Sometimes it takes me a couple of days to realize that, but there was, I have a really cool step 10 story that, again, all this humility and pride, and one of my character defects is my looks, and I've been told I have looks that can kill, which at first was kind of funny for me. And now being in recovery, like, that's not the woman who I want to be. I don't want to give you a dirty look and make you feel bad. Because then that makes me feel bad for practicing that. So I felt my face contort towards this woman. And she's a mutual friend. She's a friend of mine. But she did not have the right answer to when my wedding was. And I was like, what? You should know. And so that night it came up, like, I owe her an apology. I don't want to be that person. And when I called her about it, I was like, you know, I feel as though I owe you an amends. I don't want to be this person. I want to be loving and kind to you and honor our relationship. And she was like, I didn't even realize that you did that. I was like, oh, man, you know how hard it was for me to be that vulnerable and, like, that humble to you? But it was good because I needed to clean that up, or else I wouldn't be able to sleep that night. And so like that, that level of truth is so important for me today. Because that's just another one of those secrets I would have just continued to act upon and had no idea. I love, like, I'm homeless right now. I'm home groupless, I should say. And so, like, I'm starting to get connected down here in the Portland area. And it's pretty cool how I don't really have to do much. Like, there's women in my life who just come in at exactly the right time. And I was just asked to facilitate a women's retreat on step 12. And so I really love step 12. I love, there's three parts to it. And I love that in order to have had a spiritual awakening, we had to be asleep at some point. And to practice all of these principles in our affairs, we have to start to know what they are. So that's why you go through the 12 steps. With each step, there's a principle. And so her and I are going through this, and we're really excited and we're fired up about it. And like how to practice these principles in all of our affairs, because I find that it's so, like, I love working with other women. I love sponsoring other women. I love connecting with fellow women in this program. And it's just awesome to have that mutual relationship. But to practice them in all of our affairs where no one's looking is sometimes a different story. Like, am I always picking up the trash when I miss the trash can? You know, simple things like that, or giving money back when somebody gives me the wrong change. But just being aware that those are a part of me now is such a miracle, because that definitely wasn't who I used to be, and I had no idea how to do that. But right about at the end of time. And I just want to say thank you to Krista for asking me to come and share, and hopefully you guys heard God tonight, and hopefully I wasn't too much in the way. I don't know. Thanks.
Yeah, my name's Nate. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for the invite. Appreciate it. I know I don't have to stick to the fifth step for a full half an hour, but it's pretty random, really. I actually just had a chance to do like a makeshift fifth step with my sponsor today. I didn't plan it so that I could have something awesome to talk about either. It just happens. Like, that's what happens when I'm actively working a program. Like, I let some stuff go, you know what I mean? Stuff that came up in nightly reviews that I didn't want to process thoroughly, and the stuff sticks around, you know? So that's what I do. I process it, you know? And it doesn't have to be, like, a big sacred thing for me today. Like, my sponsor now lives in Texas, so we just get on the phone, you know? We cut out half an hour, and we do it, and I move on, you know? I see what's going on, and I move on. And most importantly, like, I take that stuff to my higher power, you know? Like, without looking at that, without looking at, like, what are my glaring defects in this stuff that's going on with me, that's eating me up enough for me to, like, you know, need to write it out thoroughly? And then, like, what can I be with God's help? Like, the sky's not even the limit for me, you know? And I guess that's a lot of what recovery has to do for me today, is that I'm a human being. Like, as far as I can tell, everybody in the room looks like a human to me. So I think we're all in the same boat. But that's kind of like what I never wanted to be, you know? Never wanted to be human. That was my whole deal. That's why I pumped stuff into my body as much and as long as I did. I didn't want to feel human. I didn't want to feel human emotions. I didn't want to do human things. And I certainly didn't want to feel human guilt, you know? That was a big piece of what drove me. It was the guilt that I felt. And not just guilt, but I can believe whatever lie I need to when I'm on something. And if I'm getting drunk, and obviously, like, my story is a lot like a lot of other people's, you know? Like, I wasn't too picky, you know? Like, if I was crawling out of my skin with anxiety and guilt and frustration and nerves, if there wasn't, like, booze around, I wouldn't be picky about what I put into my body, you know? Like, I wasn't going to be, oh, no, I just drank. Like, I'm all set. I'll hold off on your dry goods because I'm a respectable alcoholic, you know what I mean? Like, that was not my case. I did everything and anything that I could get my hands on, you know? Wasn't picky, ever. I think, you know, the fifth step is huge. And for me, I even felt it today. And I swear to God, I've said this every single time I read inventory to another man. This is so stupid, I don't even want to read it to you, you know? Because I get so much truth. Like, the way that I was brought up and taught to write inventory is a four-column deal where by the end of it, I'm embarrassed because it's so obvious, you know? Like, I get to look at, you know, the first two columns I can bitch about, you know? Like, I can say this is them and this is why and blah, blah, blah. And then I get into, like, what does it affect? You know what I mean? Where's my self-esteem, my emotional security, my financial security, my pride, my ambitions, all this stuff. And then, you know, I get into the point where I get to flip it all around, you know? And first time I wrote inventory, I didn't have the experience of looking at a fourth step. It was like I got a chance to basically just bitch about everybody I was mad at. I did two-column inventory my whole life before I got into AA. I didn't even know I was doing it, you know what I mean? I was just mad at everybody, and this is why, and you need to hear about it. So you can end up on my harms done list because I stole your peace of mind by bitching in your ear, you know? Like, that's what I look like. Like, I get mad at people, I rally the posse, and I want them to be on my side, you know, because that's like a part of my alcoholism also. I'm manipulative, and I want to make sure that you hear my version of the story before you hear theirs so you can be on my side, you know? And I'm talking about this stuff as like, I didn't know that had anything to do with alcoholism when I first got here. I thought I had a drinking problem. I thought I drank too much and I needed to come, not even here, but I thought I needed to go to rehab to like stop doing that. Like, end of story, really. That was my take on it. But not the case so much for me. You know, the fear of what people thought of me drove me for a lot of my life. And it still does to some extent, you know. I'm looking around, I'm seeing familiar faces. I got a chance to speak earlier in the week, and I'm like, these people already heard me. They're bored out of their minds. They're going to leave. But that's okay. I don't blame you if you do. But all the same, like... All in all, if I'm vulnerable, I'm all right. You know what I mean? I'm going to tell you guys, like, what doesn't work for me. Why? How I'm broken, you know? Like, how much of a failure I've been in certain areas of my life. And I swear to God, that stuff connects me with some people. You know what I mean? Maybe not with everybody, but the people that really need to hear it. Like, that's how I connected with the people that have guided me through this program, you know? Was seeing their vulnerability and seeing that they were broken. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, I don't have to be all these things that I'm not. I'm allowed to come into AA and tell you how busted up I am and I need help, you know? And if, you know, unfortunately, like, for any of us that aren't at that point, why would I touch a step? I wouldn't, you know? I mean, and that's just in all fairness to the deal. Like the 12 steps of AA were not on my, you know, my punch list when I first checked into detox. It wasn't the case for me. I thought I needed to go there, dry out, get, you know, sober or whatever that even looked like, and just stop doing what I was doing and go back and, like, show everybody how great I was doing, basically. That was, like, my thing, you know? I wanted to make sure I put my life together so that I could go back and say, look how good I did. I'm going to bounce here, but, like, that was my deal, too. Like, when I first, when I was still a little sick after my first trip through the steps and saw... You know, I got to my list of all the people that I had harmed that I needed to go and make amends to, you know? Wow. Like, just a forewarning, if your list is way long with people that you probably really don't need to see, you might want to check it out one more time with your sponsor. Because that was the case for me, and I say that because there were a lot of female names on that list that I wanted to go check in with, you know what I mean? To, like, see, so they could see how good I was doing. And you know, boy, you got the busted up version of me. You should have the best of me now, you know? But anyway, yeah. So needless to say, as soon as I like had this monstrosity list and I got a chance to share it with a sponsor and he's like, yeah, we're going to cut this by about 3/4. Like, you're going to basically ruin more lives if you go and do this. So let's just let's get to the stuff where you really did harm. And that was another thing. Like, I don't have the luxury of like saving my own skin at the cost of other people. I did that my whole life, you know. I remember literally, like, being in so much emotional pain over the things that I was doing that I would kind of overflow, and I would need to, like, basically just vent it on someone, usually the wrong person, you know. I'd have all this stuff going on, and I'd tell the person, probably the one that didn't need to hear what I was about to say, I'd tell them. And basically, like, drag them down with me so that I could feel a little better. You know, and this program has taught me that that's not the way that I do things, you know. It can't be. Like, unless I want to get right back into the spiritual sickness that drove me here in the first place, I can't do that. I can't, like, continue to hurt people and pretend it's okay. Because there's no more delusion for me these days. Like, when I hurt someone, it's real and it's raw and it's obvious. And I feel like a phony and all, like, I'm saying this because that's usually how it progresses, you know. And by the end of, like, 15 minutes of feeling that guilt that I hurt someone, I'm a phony and I don't belong in AA and I'm not qualified to speak here. You know, like, that's just how my self-destructive mind plummets downward in a hurry, you know? And what that really is me not being honest. That's really all it is. I think that's so simple, you know? Like, anybody new that I work with, I always tell them, like, if you can just be honest, even with me and yourself, like, you've got a fighting chance at being, of doing this, you know? I think that's true, you know, for a lot of us, most of us, anybody that, that can have the capacity to be honest, because, like, you know, you hear all the time, like, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness will keep you around, you know? Good luck with the honesty, you know? Like I said, like, that's important, and if you can do it, it's awesome, you know? Like, I could be as honest as I could be when I was first coming around. It's not the honesty that I have in my life today, I can tell you that, you know? It's a lot different for me these days because, you know, as I've gotten more and more awakened to who I really am and what's acceptable for me, things have changed. You know, what I could do my first year of sobriety would probably kill me nowadays if I tried to do it, you know? And that's okay. Like, I needed all of it. I think we go through everything we need to go through to get to where we're going. I'm a firm believer in that. Like, it all happens in pieces. Because if I had gotten, like, and it's going to keep changing. That's the cool thing. Like, I don't stand here and say, like, wow, I'm glad I've experienced the greatest level of truth there is. Because it's not true. Not even close, you know? I know for a fact that, like, I have so much more to go through and things that are going to be revealed in my life, and that's exciting to me because, like, there's no finish line in AA. There's no end result. It's basically like if I get to die, you know, clean, and I mean soul clean, you know, like if I die with nothing on my conscience, I've done well, you know. I mean, there's really no other end result for me anyway. You know, I just need to treat every day as though it could be my last, I guess you could say. And I don't deal well with, like, having things on my mind that I'm going to try to, like, forget about. Can't do it, you know? And before I, you know, go all over the place with this stuff, I just want to just back up here and tell you a little bit of, like, where I came from prior to realizing I was spiritually sick. Because, you know, that was the case for me as a young child, you know? I don't know. Like, I hear a lot of different versions and ways that people say it, but, like, there was a discomfort about my life. That's the best way I can think to say it. There was a discomfort about me being alive that I would never tell you about, would never show, but I overcompensated in a lot of ways as far back as I can remember, you know, because, like, just being me and being, like, who I really wasn't good enough, you know, and I always needed something more. And obviously, like, my craving for something different, something more, something exciting when I was a kid, it just turned into my use later on. Same thing. I found stuff that jacked me up quicker, you know? I found booze. I found drugs. I found all this stuff that used to look like me going to Funtown. I've heard my friend give this version of it. Like, when he was a kid, he used to obsess for months about going to Funtown. And then it would happen, and he's already freaking out that it's almost over on the trip there. You know? It's so true. Like, that was me. Like, I'll plan the party. The party's happening, and I'm just depressed because it's almost over. You know? What are we going to do? Like, and I'm the guy that just won't let it go. Like, I drink until my body shuts down, you know? I'm the guy that it's like 2 days later, people have gone on with their lives, and I'm still chasing that dream from Friday night, and it's Monday morning now. You know what I mean? And that's what I do. That's how I drink, and that's not normal. And whatever that word even is, I don't pretend to understand it. But I know people that can go, and it, believe me, like, I don't pretend to understand it. Like, I know people that can go out on Friday night, get hammered, have a great time, maybe even do some like, stuff that wouldn't sit well with me, and they're okay. They go on with their lives. They stop drinking. Like, they claim to have a hangover the next morning. For me, that meant you needed to drink more. You know, like, I never dealt with hangovers. I didn't understand why people did. Like, I just drank more. It made the most sense to me, you know? Or whatever it was that I was into, I would do more. You know, I would always make sure that that was the case. But there are people that can do that. Go out, party, live it up, and then, you know, whatever. Eat a greasy breakfast and drink water all day. I don't understand it. You know what I mean? And even still, like, and it talks about that in the big book, you know? Like, there's a definite difference between a hard drinker and a real alcoholic. And I think that's always important to touch on because I found a lot of camouflage with hard drinkers when I was out there. You know, because, like, I had a lot of people around me that drank just like I did, but come to find out, like, they didn't have the spiritual malady that I did. You know? They didn't continue to drink the way that I did, even though I thought they were. They drank hard. They even did some, you know, some of the other things I was into. Then somehow they managed to just, like, shut it down. You know? Shut it down, go on with their lives, graduate or get a real job. And I'm just, like, lame. Like, that's what I do, right? Like, someone does something really good with their lives, and I'm like, you're such a friggin' poser, you know? You're leaving me here, basically? That's what it looked like, you know? You're going to leave me here to continue to drink alone on Tuesday, and you're going to go on and, like, have this great career. Good for you. Awesome. You know? And that's the epitome of alcoholism, is my selfishness and my soul sickness. You better not do anything good unless it involves me. I want some fringe benefits for everything that you get going on, you know? I still do that sometimes today, you know? If I try to, like, get in good with certain people because I know they, like, get free tickets or whatever it is, you know what I mean? I'm like, I can still be crazy, you know? But all the same, like, I could never say, like, that's great, I'm really happy for you. I just couldn't, you know? Because I was the victim every single day of my life. And if you had it good, like, why don't I? It could never be just, like, good job, great, you know? It's always about, like, I don't have that. Always came full circle back to me. And that's what I did. I obsessed about me for every single year that I was out there active. And it ultimately drove me to my knees in a point of pain that I never experienced before in my life, you know? And that's the only reason that I got into to recovery, you know, was because I experienced that pain to the level that it was where it didn't matter what was going on around me. There was no more delusion in my head that I could be okay doing what I'm doing. They talk about it in the book as being like the jumping off point where, like, you can't imagine life with or without a drink. I know that place well, you know. I did a lot of drinking without my permission, so to speak. You know, like, I remember many, many times where I was like, I see for a fact that this is really, really tearing my life apart. I'm not going to do it anymore, you know. I'm not going to do it anymore. It should be that easy. And then all of a sudden, like, the opportunity arises 3 hours later, and I'm into it. And I, you know, I can't, like, wait a second, but I wasn't going to do that, you know. And I had a real hard time differentiating, you know, my lack of power versus my, like, just, you know, coincidence. I guess, you know, it was like, what it really was lack of power, but what I saw it as, like, coincidence and whatever. Living my life, you know. Let's live it up. Like, okay, let's do it. Why not, you know. But 3 hours later, I'm saying I'm never touching it again. You know, I spent so many days, you know, multiple days, you know, shaking it out, totally sick, crawling back and forth from the bathtub to the bed, shaking, sweating, heating up, and just trying to control that. And I'm telling myself, like, this isn't right. You know what I mean? Like, I'm literally, like, dying. I could feel my heartbeat in my tongue. I'm withdrawing. You know what I mean? That's what's happening to me. I'll never do this again. I'll never do it again, you know? And more often than not, for me, it was like, well, I got to back off on the drugs. You know what I mean? Like, this is obviously what's causing this. Because, like, I'm sick, you know? I'm not, like, hungover sick. I'm sick, you know? So I'm going to, like, shake those and just stick to the beer, right? And I'm right back crawling back and forth the next week, you know? It never changed for me. Like, and that's the thing. Like, when I first got sober, I was in a position where I was unemployable, homeless, in Lewiston, Maine. Oh, thank you. That's beautiful. Huh? And yeah, for me, I'd like never even been there. You know, I ended up there by accident, basically. Ended up in rehab. That's where my path started. And I remember all the guys that I was living with at the shelter were like, I got their version of AA and NA and all this other stuff, you know, which was pretty crazy, as most of you have probably experienced. Like, oh, they're like, yeah, you can still do drugs. You just got to pick up a white chip, you know, or you can still drink. You just got to get a new key tag. You know what I mean? I was like, what? I don't understand this. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was kind of all the same. No, you can do whatever you want, you know? But
Let me just say, like, if that's not literal. Like, that's a bad idea. Real bad idea. I played that card a lot, you know, where I tried to, like, trade out my dry good problem for my alcohol, you know? And it was always the same. I mean, it always led me full circle back to what I really wanted to do in the first place, whatever I got into. Because basically what happens for me is it doesn't even have to be one of those two things. That's a really small pocket, actually, of the things I can use to escape, you know? I can get into money. I can get into relationships. I can get into anything that makes me feel exhilarated and, like, blind to what's really going on in my life, and that's what I want. You know, I used that stuff for a long time in my life, where, like, if I wasn't actively, you know, drinking, I was doing something else. You bet you can count on it, you know? There was never a time where I could be, like, just doing nothing, comfortable in my own skin. There was no such thing as that. I've never experienced that until I got into the step work, you know, in here. And, you know, I remember when things were getting bad for me, and I was basically, like, every day was spent wishing people didn't care about me anymore so that I could really, like, drink the way I wanted to and hopefully just die. That was my plan, you know? I remember landing in a detox one time and eventually having to face the music, you know? I slept for, like, 3 days, and then I finally realized, like, oh, yeah, people have been looking for me for, like, weeks, you know? And that whatever level of, like, conscience that was still left in me, I did. I had to, like, call. I called my father, and I remember very clearly, like, because, like, I always played the card like I wasn't hurting anybody but myself, and I really wanted to believe that, you know, so bad. But it wasn't true. I was tearing everybody's lives apart. Anybody that's ever had anyone that's cared about them, I swear, everybody is affected by this disease, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And it runs deep, you know. The people that I hurt were just people I didn't even think I was hurting, you know. Like my parents, I said, just leave me alone. Let me do what I need to do. Get off my back. Stop caring about me, basically, you know. And I'm, you know, nowadays I can't even fathom, like, the sick nights they must have had, you know. And they've told me, you know, I've had a chance to go make amends with them and hear the real story of what my use did to them. And it wasn't pretty, you know. It wasn't pretty at all. It basically tore my family apart, you know. And they got to spend night after night after night sick, worrying, like, am I dead? Where am I? What's going on? And I called my father from this detox, and he was like, I had never heard him shed a tear in my life. And he was crying on the other end of the phone, saying, like, that they thought I was dead. Where am I? We're coming. Like that. You know, like I was like 3-4 hours away from where they lived and they were there, you know, even though I had done everything in my power to push them away, like they still cared about me enough, you know, and ultimately that was what it was for me in the end. Like I had just a couple people left in my life that cared about me more than I cared about myself and gave me a nudge, you know, changed something. And like every day for me was basically spent, you know, trying to drink myself to death, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, I just didn't want to do life anymore. It was such a hassle. And the pain was so great that I couldn't even, like, I couldn't turn it off. There wasn't a person I could use up or something I could ingest that would turn that stuff off in my head anymore, you know? And that was my pain, you know? That was my pain that got me to a point where I was willing to do something different. And everybody's pain is different. And that's a big thing. Because when I first came in, I listened to everybody's war stories, and I figured, wow, like, yep, I fit with that guy, not so much with that guy. That guy's cool because he swears a lot from the podium. you know, like, I had all these ways of judging AA, right? Like, and I'm broken. I'm the most insane I've ever been in my life, and I'm in AA, still trying to be the cool guy. You know what I mean? Like, rolling in on the druggy buggy, like, all gelled up and looking good, you know? I don't say that to, like, you know, whatever. I don't mean any offense by that to anybody in here, because that was what it was for me. Like, all 15 of us were spending, you know, an hour before time primping, getting ready to go. Like, and my sponsor was like, he literally called me on that. He's like, what the hell do you have to bring to the table right now? You're living in detox, you know? You're living in a rehab. And I'm like, you know, it wasn't funny to me at the time. I was pissed, you know? Like, I was angry. And I mean, I had no reason not to be. Like, he just totally took a shot at my pride, leveled me, you know? And, like, those are the people that have absolutely saved my life, you know? The guys that are willing to shoot through my pride and level me and let me know what's really going on. Most of the time, I don't react too favorably. Nowadays, I've come to enjoy it a little more, but, like, wow, like, I didn't want to be around anybody that was talking about the truth when I first got in here. It was too painful to look at, you know? But like I said in the beginning, like honesty, truth, that is at the core of what I do today. You know, and that's what I learned in the 12 steps is like honesty, truth. Like that's a lot of the core of what we do. It has to be. I can't walk around and be, you know, doing one thing in one area of my life and coming in here and saying all this like good on the topic stuff and pretend to go home and be okay in my own skin. It doesn't work for me. And like, you know, going back to like the hard drinkers or whatever, maybe that is the case for some people. I know a lot of people in AA, they don't work steps. They don't even need to. They just go to meetings and love life. And that would kill me. I say that only because it would kill me because I did it. You know, like I came in, I did a real half measures version of what this is, and it almost killed me. You know, I lost my mind in recovery, and I blamed it on AA, of course. Couldn't be me, you know. It's like, AA doesn't work. I haven't done a thing. I don't have a sponsor. I haven't done the steps, but AA doesn't work. I'm still miserable, you know. I'm going to 14 meetings a week, and things still aren't getting better, you know. Make me feel better. That's like my thing, you know. Make me feel better now. I don't want to wait around. Like, let's go. And come to find out, like, I needed to do it. I needed to do all the stuff myself, you know. And once that pain got great enough and I realized, whoa, I haven't even really, like, done anything. That's why I'm losing my mind, someone so kindly pointed out. I latched on to a sponsor immediately. You know what I mean? Because I finally connected the dots. And had I not had the experience, I probably never would have, you know. So I say that, like, if you're having any type of experience that isn't awesome in the moment, I guarantee when it comes full circle and you realize, wow, that happened for a reason, you know? I'm glad that happened. I'm glad that I experienced that so that I could experience this, you know? I'm glad I suffered for so many years out there using because I'd never be able to sit here tonight, you know? It's just the way it goes. Like, had I been... I believe that, too. Like, had I had, like, a whatever normal life and was out not drinking, not using, just being all right and... I know for a fact that I wouldn't be as happy as I am today working a program of AA. I wouldn't be, you know? The level of truth and honesty that I get to have in my life today is just beyond my wildest dreams. Like, I have nothing in my system today that can make me stay awake at night. And I don't mean that, like, in pill form. I mean that, like, in stuff that used to keep me up. Guilt, you know? Guilt, shame, remorse. Like, feeling bad about something. Feeling like a fraud. I lied, you know? Like, that stuff... I can't have that going on today. I just can't. And I need to look at it and I need to deal with it. And I don't have to. Well, I have to. It's not a mandatory thing. That's the cool piece, too, with AA. Like, everything really, you know, they say it's optional. It really is in terms of, like, you know, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But, like, if you want to get well, you have to, you know. That's been my experience. But, you know... But then again, like, I don't know. I don't know what anybody needs, and I don't pretend to know what everybody needs. I'm a firm believer that, like, the power that's at work here is God. It's not me. It's not people. It's not anything like that, you know? It's not meetings. And I've seen experiences where, like, when someone's done, someone's beaten, someone's ready to change their lives, there's absolutely nothing that a sponsor can do to mess that up. They will do it. They will change, you know? Because God's in their pocket, and they're ready to go. You can't create that for another person. No human can create that, you know? So I say that because if you have pain and you're ready to strike while the iron's hot, do it, you know? Do it, because if you have a mind like mine, eventually, quicker than later, your head will be like, you were probably making too big of a deal of that. You're probably not really an alcoholic, you know? You probably just had a few bad ones. You should just go back out and try it out again, you know? Your friends miss you. Like, whatever my head needed to tell me to, like, get me back out there, there I was, you know? Over and over and over and over again, my friends were the first ones to just tap me on the back and be like, you're not an alcoholic, you know? Like, why'd you even go to detox? I don't even understand that, you know? But they obviously didn't understand where I was coming from. So when I come in here and I get a chance to connect with real alcoholics on the level that I suffer alcoholism, it is beautiful. You know? It's beautiful. I love connecting on the level of the heart with people that understand where I'm coming from and where I want to go. You know? And people that don't speak my language, that's okay too. I don't have to, like, you know, we don't all have to be like doing the same things. That'd be crazy judgmental of me to think that we do. You know? But I do believe that, like, the core of AA is step work, you know? And for me, there's no way around that. And the reason that we do step work is to get connected to God. And what God looks like for me today is truth and honesty, you know? Me being accountable for my actions. Like, I can't do things and blame them on anybody else. I can't say that you made me do that anymore, you know? Like, I used to drink at people, you know? I would get so pissed off that I'd be, like, planning my own funeral, like, every week, you know? And, like, they'll be sad. And I've heard that said since, like, I'm, you know, they're way too selfish. Like, the only way I would ever kill myself is that if I could come back and watch how many people were sad at my funeral, you know? And it's a morbid topic to be funny about, but it's true, you know? I mean, suicide was real for me at the end. I wanted it. I wanted out, you know? But there was still that level in me, that little level of conscience that was like, I could still see the pain in my family and people that cared about me, you know? And that's the stuff, like, I just wanted off so bad. I wanted to turn that off. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go word for word through every step, but what I can say is that, you know, having a sponsor qualify me for alcoholism in my first step was vital for me to make a start, you know? I needed him to sit me down and literally walk me through the big book, read me the big book, you know, and point out what's going on here. Like, this is your malady. This is how screwed you really are, is basically what it looked like, you know? And because had that not happened for me, there would be no reason for me to want to dive into the steps and go forward, you know? I was well aware, and, you know, I've heard it said many times by other people, like, the end result of my first step is that I saw, you know, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. That's kind of the easy part. My life being unmanageable, I don't really understand that until I'm really, really looking at that and seeing, wow, I do a lot of totally insane, crazy things as a result of this disease. It has very little to do with me drinking, you know? Most of the chaos that precedes me drinking is the reason I sit here. They talk about that peculiar mental twist, you know? The phenomenon of craving. And what that looks like for me in a dumbed-down version is like, when I get one little sip of booze in my system, something cranks on and it's like this clenching at the top of my throat, you know, where I need more. Like, it's got to happen. I need more, 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 more. You know, and there's really no off valve to that. I've never once figured out how to turn that off, and that's why I'm here tonight, you know? And it, for me, too, like, once the obsession locked in, you know, because, like, I was on my way to drinking far before I ever actually gotten in, even in the vicinity of drinking, you know? Like, my head, once it locks in, once it switches over, you know, that mental thing, that mental phenomenon where my mind all of a sudden says, like, you're going to drink. Nobody will know it, you know what I mean? But once my head clicks over and says, like, this is happening, it's like I'm on death row and it's a matter of time. I don't know when or how, but it's going to happen. And I know it. Like, I'm not done. I know I'm not done. And I'm going to drink. And all it really takes is something, like, crazy or convenient to fall into my way. And I'm like, oh, yeah, good idea, you know? Because my mind's already made up. It's made up way before I drink. And so for me, it was really like I needed to see that, like, my mind is just as sickened as my body. You know, but again, like the biggest thing is like getting a sponsor, you know, the weight of the world was off my shoulders as soon as that happened, because all of a sudden I had someone to guide me through this thing, just show me what it was all about, you know, teach me. And basically, you know, me saying that I didn't know and no longer trying to pretend like I did, you know, that's the worst thing. Like, there's nothing worse than being in AA, feeling like you want to show everybody that you've got it all together, but you're really just falling apart. But you're still too proud to say, I need help, you know? I'll figure it out. I don't need to let them know that I'm falling apart. I'll figure it out, and then we'll just move on, you know? And vulnerability is key, you know? As soon as you can make the switch to say, you know, I need some help. I don't know what I'm doing. Something's got to change. Any of those things that basically would shatter your pride and your ego before coming in here, those are good things, you know? Really good things. Because, I mean, my ego was just out of control when I got in here. You know, I said this the other night, and I just thought I was like, I thought I was the coolest person on the planet. And I basically, you know, thought I judged everybody all the time, you know. And that's a huge defect for me today that I don't want to be. I don't want to be that judgmental guy, you know, that's judging people. Because you know what happened? Like, as I got a chance to write inventory and get honest, some of my biggest fears were the actual defects that I was practicing in my life, you know. I judge people, so therefore I'm terrified of being judged. I'm a cheater, so I'm scared you're going to cheat on me. You know? I lie, so I assume that everybody around me is lying to me too. And so honestly, call it karma, call it what you will, but like when I started to put good energy out into the universe, started to, you know, live my life in a different way with the help that I learned and the principles of these steps, all of a sudden, like, I wasn't paranoid about being screwed over anymore. being punked, you know, having the wool pulled over my eyes by someone. All of a sudden, like, I'm able to just be myself and be okay. And for me, prior to coming in here, that's not something that I experienced, you know. Being comfortable in my own skin. I heard someone say that when I was in detox, and that's what really set the hook for me, that I needed to look into this. Like, he said he was comfortable in his own skin now, and he wasn't before. And I knew what that felt like. I didn't know, because a lot of that stuff in the big book that my sponsor helped me to paint myself in there and look at, I had all that feelings, and I knew exactly what it was. I just needed to connect it, you know. I needed him to help me connect it to the book and to see that, like, that's exactly what I felt, you know. I could never put a word on it, but that's it, you know. And that's my experience, and that's what happened for me. So I'm a big advocate for AA. It saved my life, you know. The step work saved my life, and people being willing to help me when I couldn't help myself saved my life. And ultimately, you know, being introduced to a higher power, God, whatever you want to call it. What God looks like for me today is that my conscience is on steroids and I'm no longer able to live in delusion. You know, that's a pretty good deal. Figure it out however you want. Like, as far as I'm concerned, every version of God ties back to the same basic principles and they're in the steps. So if you do the steps, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have a real good start. Because who knows what that's going to be? I don't even have an idea today. I don't know what God is. I don't pretend to. I do know that God is in relationships, though, and God is in love. And with that stuff going on in my life, I feel damn good. You know, when I'm trying to do things for other people and to pack into the stream of life in a positive way, that's big stuff for me. And that's how I feel God. I can't sit in a vacuum and hope that I connect to greater levels of spirituality, you know? I've had guys call me that I'm sponsoring and say, like, I think I want to experiment with LSD to really get to know God better, you know? And I'm thinking, go for it, man, if you really feel like that's the way to do it. But if you go and help someone, I guarantee you'll get a better result. You know? And it's usually the truth. God's not in a pill. God's not in chemicals. God is in people, you know? And I say that because, like, you never know what battle someone's fighting. And even just being kind to other humans will make you feel good at the end of the day. You know, not thinking about what I need to feel okay all day, every day is a really good thing, you know? Because it's all taken care of. Come to find out, like, there's no amount of worry that can make sure I'm going to be okay for the rest of my life. So if you feel that way, just keep living here, helping people, and get hooked in with a sponsor that's going to show you how to walk this thing, you know? That'll close. Thanks.
Right on.